Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Here we are less than a week out from Election Day, and we're continuing KUNM's special election coverage this morning with a conversation about Native American voters here in New Mexico and what you can expect at the polls over the next couple of days at early voting centers and on Election Day next week. We do invite your calls and comments this morning. You can call locally here in Albuquerque, 277-5866. You can call toll-free, 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org. You can also go to our website, kunm.org, and click on the link for this show. You'll see it on our homepage, and you can post your comments about this show at the bottom of that page. So lots of ways to engage with the KUNM Call-In Show. Joining us this morning, we have Lori Wiaki. She is the director of the Native American Voter Alliance here in New Mexico. Also, Lana Atkison. She is a political science professor at the University of New Mexico and director of the university's Center on Voting, Elections, and Democracy. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to start with you, Lori. We just heard a little bit a few minutes ago from Governor Dashno from Santa Clara Pueblo talking about that community's efforts to get out the vote. I wanted to hear from you. What is your organization doing? What are, at this point in time, you know, with just a few days left, what are your plans?
Sure. So we're doing a lot of the similar sorts of get out the vote program. We have a canvas going. We got phone banks going. Basically trying to find Native American people throughout New Mexico, asking them to make sure to go out and vote. We're actually doing a lot of the early vote push, trying to get folks to get to the polls early just in case there's anything wrong with their, you know, voter registration or anything like that. We're trying to make sure folks get in the door a little bit earlier. But of course, a lot of people like to reserve their vote for Election Day, and it seems it's sort of changing. It used to be a lot more firm, like, we're not voting till Election Day is kind of the response we get from a lot of folks. But that is slightly changing, and I think it's kind of a generational thing. And I also think the whole, at least here in Bernalillo County, we've seen the voting convenience centers actually be really helpful for people to find the place to vote, you know, a lot more accessible in a lot of ways.
What do you think makes voting on Election Day something that has historically been preferred?
Well, I know more on like Navajo Reservation, it was just a chance for people to gather. Like, people really liked the idea of coming to the chapter house and getting, you know, I got to participate in some elections early on with my grandparents, and they would get phone calls in from different chapters and, you know, counting up the votes on the board. And of course, a lot of that is very different now. Although some places of the reservation, they still don't have the technology, you know, necessary to, you know, just watch it on the screen or whatever. But really that sort of atmosphere of coming together, participating with one another, talking about, you know, different policies and also, you know, food, that sort of stuff, kind of a little more festive.
More of a social gathering. If you're a member of a tribal community tuning in this morning, please give us a call and let us know about whether you're going to vote early voting, whether you've already voted, or whether you're planning to vote on Election Day. We'd like to hear from you about your perspective on when you prefer to vote and what that means to you in your community. Again, 277-5866 is the number to call locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You know, Lori, we've seen a little bit of coverage this morning and in recent months about this voter turnout push in tribal communities across the U.S. The National Conference of American Indians targeted 18 states with high Native American populations as both for voter registration and for voter turnout. Can you talk a little bit about historical low voter turnout and why you think that has been demonstrated over the years and why you think it's important to change that?
Sure. I think, historically, the Native American people have had a stressful relationship with the United States government, and I'm being a little bit joking about that, but very seriously, you know, there has been a lot of mistrust, a lot of, you know, broken treaties, all that kind of stuff that has really impacted how Native American people thought about the United States government. I think that changed somewhat with World War II, with a lot of our Native, probably like my father's generation, a lot of those folks actually going in to participate in World War II and fight for this country. You know, so I think that sort of changed a lot of the thinking. But I also think the whole, you know, civil rights movement, all that kind of stuff really sort of forced people to begin to think more critically about our historical relationships with the United States government. I think there's also been a variety of strategies in, like, how do we deal with this, you know, nation to nation? How do we deal with the U.S. government? And, you know, there's a lot of different really interesting and exciting thought, I guess, about that in terms of sovereignty and how should we participate. But I also think that there's a real pragmatic school of thought that a lot of folks are understanding that, you know, we are part of this whole system. You know, the city of Albuquerque gets resources from the United States government, Bernalillo County, you know, McKinley County. And so as part of this community, we feel like we also paid our dues and we do pay our taxes, and therefore we should exercise our rights to push for those resources and make them available to our communities, right? And so so we see ourselves as starting to, you know, with the globalization and all that kind of stuff happening, we find ourselves a bit more involved, I guess, in a lot of different policies that we hadn't quite expected or, you know, decided upon. We find a lot of those policies do impact our communities. And so what you're finding is a lot more folks being a little bit more interested in voting, Native people being a lot more interested in voting. But we also really understand that historical tension. And so for us, you know, we really look at voting as one tool in the toolbox. It's not every tool in the toolbox. It's one of them. It is an important one. And, you know, we talk to tribal leaders who've gone to Washington, D.C. and sort of, you know, pounded on the desk and said, you know, these resources are important to our community. We have, you know, 3,000 people or whatever. And the response back oftentimes is like, well, but only 24% of you vote or only 40% of you vote. And so our tribal leadership is also really starting to feel the necessity, I think, which I think Santa Clara demonstrates very well. They're very clear about how to utilize a lot of their power in a variety of ways.
I'm also interested in hearing a little bit about generational differences in communities. I spoke to some of the organizers of some of the registration events that the NCAI was sponsoring, and one of the things that some of those organizers mentioned was that there are elders in some communities who may have that stronger feeling about rejecting the federal government and rejecting the relationship with the United States government. And then you have younger generations who are perhaps targeted in those voter registration efforts to reach out to the elders in their communities. Can you talk a little bit about that kind of generational divide in tribal communities?
Sure. I think it's actually, it's kind of an interesting, if you really think about it, a lot of like my grandparents, they were on the, you know, boarding schools. They've suffered a lot of those sorts of atrocities, but they became very invested in the Bureau of Indian Affairs, right? And so for them, voting became sort of a duty. You know, it's your job. It's part of what you do as an American citizen, you know, up until like World War II. And I really think the generation that sort of split from a lot of that was the civil rights, you know, 60s, 70s.
AIM and the American Indian Movement.
Yeah, and I think that generation did a lot more sort of separation from voting. Like they really took a more critical eye to that and didn't necessarily believe everything the U.S. government said.
Is that more of like a boycott attitude right? Like I refuse to participate in this.
Yeah, and I think it really was a search for this meaning of sovereignty. Like what does that really mean? And I think, you know, language also plays a big part of that. Like those that really speak their languages You know, all this sort of stuff happens. And then you have this newer generation, probably the 90s, 80s, 90s, into 2000. And they are the ones, of course, being targeted by this get out the vote effort. And, you know, the last presidential election was the first African-American, credible African-American, I don't know, to me he seemed like a lot more credible in that he didn't just search after, you know, people of color to get him elected or just the progressives. Like, he really understood he needed to have a much wider net, and he needed to capture middle-class soccer mom, you know, Anglo mom folks, right? And so so I think the younger generation actually, to me it's amazing, like they don't really know. I think a lot of them could study that, and you sort of know that, you know, this was a big deal. But in a very real way, there's a lot of younger folks that don't know, like, just how tough and how hard and how many lives and how many years people spent, you know, trying to engage people on, you know, either in politics or to make change in a different way. So I think there is some slight generational differences, and it sort of, you know, goes up and down in terms of people's level of participation. And I think a lot of younger people, you know, with the Rock the Vote, you know, what we're finding in our work is there still is a lot of mixed feelings about politics, right? And I talk too much, sorry.
No, that's all right. That's all right. So for you listening, do you have mixed feelings about voting? Are you a member of a tribal community here in New Mexico? Perhaps you have mixed feelings about participating in the federal elections or in the state elections. Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. The number is 277-5866. That's locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online at KUNM.org. You can also email callinshow@KUNM.org. Let's go to our first caller, Glenn in Hemis Springs. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks so much for this program. When your guest mentioned historical tension, that rang a bell for me. I contacted the Jemez Pueblo as a white guy and offered to register people a few months ago and never got a contact back. I think for those of us who work on, live near, appreciate our pueblos in New Mexico, we simply have to keep accepting this historical tension reality and continue being a good neighbor. I wanted to comment on something that happened to me in Bernalillo when I went to vote early last weekend. As my wife and I entered the room where the machines are, I noted on the door big sheets that said you could write in Bob Anderson as U.S. Senate, write in Jeannie Pauls as rep. And when it came to my turn to talk to the lady at the end of the line, and I said, well, I'm going to write in, she said, you can't write outside of the little oval circles. And I said, well, your door says I can. And so I had to go find the main lady in charge, and everybody in the room is looking at me as, you know, what's going on here? So the confusion was finally resolved. If this happened to me last weekend in Bernalillo, where lots of people were voting, I suspect maybe the training hasn't been thorough in other parts, and I encourage other voters to stand up and, if they want to write in Bob Anderson for U.S. Senate as I did, just persist, and it can be done.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. Let's go now to Lana Atkinson. She is a professor of political science at the University of New Mexico. She's also the director of the UNM Center on Voting, Elections, and Democracy. Lana, is this something that you've seen, confusion about write-in candidates? You spent a lot of time observing polls, observing poll workers, observing voters in the process of voting, and trainings also, right?
Yeah, I've been watching the process for a number of years, and I've been in the vote centers, the voting convenience centers here in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County during this early voting period. I have not seen that. They have really broken down the training So particular people only know particular things. So if you talk, for example, perhaps to the rover who was trying to help people just, you know, with their ballot and make sure if they need the auto mark or some other sort of assistance in the voting booth, then they may not have those details. So thinking about sort of the presiding judge, the election judge, the people in charge of the vote center, if you have a question, those are the people that you probably want to focus on. The other people, the greeters, the rovers, they've been trained for particular tasks and so may not know the overall overall rules and laws associated with the balloting process or the process itself within the vote center.
One of the questions that we've been hearing from folks are concerns about poll challengers. There was a recent story about a training by a county Republican Party person who was training poll challengers with inaccurate information. Can you explain what a poll challenger is and who they are? There's the roles of the official poll people, as you just mentioned, greeters and rovers. I'm trying not to think Curiosity Rover. Stay away from Curiosity Rover in my mind. So there's all these different kinds of different folks who are performing different roles in this poll environment. Who are the poll challengers and where do they come from? Who gives them authority and what do they do?
Well, they really don't have any authority in the Voting Convenience Center. They are allowed to look up things. They are appointed by the parties. And so you have watchers, challengers, and observers. And challengers and watchers basically play the same role. They're just appointed by different people. So challengers are appointed by the parties and watchers are appointed by election related organizations and candidates. And so they have very specific things they can do. They're not allowed to talk to voters. They can look at the polls. They can see what the public count is on the optical scan machines. They can observe the voting process and especially the check-in process to make sure that they're legitimate voters. They can form a challenge when a voter has to go into a provisional status. But if the voter is a qualified voter, if they haven't already voted, if they're not on the polls, if they're a legitimate voter, they haven't voted yet, then there can't be a challenge that would prevent them from voting or that would move them into a provisional ballot status. Only voters who are already have one of these problems, if you've already voted, you voted absentee. I think there was a recent where a father or a son got confused and they marked off the wrong person and he'd already voted. So in that case, you could challenge that voter and it just gets written as challenged on the provisional.
Lori, in tribal communities in New Mexico, are these this kind of poll process with watchers and challengers and then all the poll staff members, what is the perception among tribal communities of this system?
I think it, for the most part, it's been positive, I would say, mainly because in most of the tribal communities, you're really pulling these poll watchers, these folks from your own community. And so, like, I know, for instance, in Zia Pueblo, they have their regular Republican, you know, person there that is always fired up to do the poll watching for the Republican Party. And they all get along and, you know, folks are related. Like, we have a lot of relations within our communities. So it's a lot more friendlier and people are willing to sort of open up to this process. I think as things get a lot more technical and the potential for the vote, the races, I guess, getting a lot closer, it does become important to really focus on the training a lot more than maybe it has in the past. But I think for the most part, a lot of the tribes have a lot of that already sort of set up and take it very seriously. Like, they really do. They take that whole job very seriously and make sure, you know, they're counting all the votes correctly and all that sort of stuff.
What about for Native American voters who live in urban communities that don't have that same kind of a little bit more homogenous tribal community where everybody knows each other and it's very much a social gathering almost on election day. What about the other folks in other communities that are more mixed?
Sure. I think then that's when we're we find ourselves really having to sort of defend our vote a little bit more. And there's a lot of groups out there doing excellent work that I'm just really pleased that are on the job. You know, there's the Common Cause folks, you know, they're really doing a good job in terms of election protection, making sure we have good attorneys that, you know, that can really help voters in the poll booth, right? And so for us, it has varied. In some years, I've been doing this work for quite a few years, and in the past, it seemed like there were times when a lot of, like, younger, kind of the long-haired Native folk come to the poll sites in different areas of town. People really sort of, you know, straighten up and look at them and, you know, can very sweetly and nicely sort of move them out the back door, you know. And if you don't know better, a lot of times you're just sort of, oh, okay, they told me to vote on this other provisional ballot or something like that, you know. And for the most part, we haven't had too much problems with that. But we do a lot of work to really try to help people understand what their rights are when they go to the polls. And it seems to be a little bit more important to do these sorts of trainings in urban areas amongst Native folks that are, like, first-time voters, right, and really understanding what sort of IDs, you know, because in the past, I know at the state legislature, they were trying to pass a photo ID law, and they were saying, okay, yeah, we'll include tribal IDs. So that was the big deal for us to vote in favor of that. But the thing was I don't think what people understand is that not every tribe has an official looking photo ID, right? Some of us, we get a letter from our governor saying, yes, you know, Lori Wiaki is from Coach T and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I know that by going down to the poll site, if you don't know that that's a legitimate piece of government documentation, I could see people very easily kind of frowning at you, like, don't you have anything else, you know?
Right.
And that's the sort of stuff we're a little bit more concerned about, is how we gently but firmly get pushed out of the vote. And so we try to do a lot of work to remedy that.
Lori Wiaki is with the Native American Voter Alliance. We're also joined this morning by Lana Atkison. She is a political science professor at the University of New Mexico. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and we're talking about what to expect at the polls, both in these last few days before Election Day and on Election Day itself. If you have questions for our guests or comments about your voting experience, please call 277-5866. You can also call locally. That was the local number. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Join the UNM History Department on November 8th for this year's Richard W. Edelaine Lecture, Indigenous Realities, Planning for the Next Millennium, presented by Dr. Ted Hohola, a distinguished professor with the UNM School of Architecture and Planning. Thursday, November 8th at 5:30 p.m. in George Pearl Hall Auditorium. For information, visit centerforthesouthwest.unm.edu or call 277-4344. A message from the tax-exempt UNM History Department.
Support for KUNM comes from the not-for-profit New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where members earn rewards for their relationship, checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details and calculator on member rewards at nmefcu.org.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's just short of 8:30, and we're continuing KUNM special election coverage. We have Lori Wiaki from the Native American Voter Alliance and Professor Lana Atkison from the University of New Mexico. And we do have a call right now, but first I just wanted to return to one point that you were making, Lori, about photo identification and voter identification, in that the law in New Mexico does not require voters to show a photo ID as the form of voter identification. I think that's often a point of confusion for voters, that all voters are required to do when they go to the polls, as long as they didn't register by mail without an ID, is to state their name and their address of registration and their date of birth, and that that verbal identification is sufficient under New Mexico law for voting. And that's something that folks are often confused about. Let's go to the phones right now. Shirley in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
I was wondering, who owns New Mexico's voting machines? Is it a private corporation or is it the state? Because there's so much voter suppression going on, you know, because they can manipulate the machines because there's no receipt at the other end. Mitt Romney's son owns partial ownership in some of the voting machines in Ohio and other states. I'm very concerned with the ownership of voting machines.
Well, let's take that question to Professor Atkinson. Explain the voter machine system in New Mexico.
The voter machines are owned locally, so they're not owned by any corporation. We purchase them. And the voting machines in New Mexico are optical scans, so they are bubbles, you know, bubble ballots where you bubble in the oval for the candidate or ballot other ballot item. And so there is a paper receipt. And New Mexico also has one of the strongest post-election auditing systems, I would argue, in the country.
And so the voter fills out a paper ballot. That ballot is then scanned through the machine where the bubbles, I'm thinking of students, bubble in your name, taking a standardized test. But in this case, it's a standardized voting form. And then so the ballot counts as the receipt. That paper ballot that the voter filled out is the paper receipt of that vote, right?
That's correct. It is the receipt. And, you know, those ballots are used potentially as part of the post-election audit. And the ballots, you know, are counted as they go into the machine. If you have a write-in candidate, as the caller who called in earlier, the machine actually has this device. And if you've got to mark the oval that says write-in and then write in the name next to it, you know, whoever it is you want to vote for. And then the machine actually has a diverter, and those ballots are placed in a different part of the machine, and they're taken out at the end of Election Day and counted for those write-in candidates.
Because you're using a person to count to read the writing of the people who've written in the...
Right. A lot of people vote for Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and other, you know, other people who are not registered as write-in candidates. And so only registered write-in candidates with the Secretary of State's office can be counted. So you cannot rely on the total that comes up from the machine at the end of the day that says, you know, this is how many write-in candidates there were, because you actually have to go in and count the names that are written there and make sure they're for the qualified candidates.
Or there might be more than one, too.
There could be more than one, yes.
Right. And so then what about this question about the software? This has also been an issue for folks who have concerns about the electronic voting machines and the software that runs those machines. There are folks who are concerned that that software is vulnerable to manipulation, that votes that the person may have bubbled one candidate on their ballot, but that the machine has been tampered with and is programmed to count that bubble for a different candidate. What about those concerns?
The counties do, and the county clerks do, logic and accuracy testing, and they check all of their ballots to make sure that the ballot items are being counted properly as a pre-check to the election. An election is actually quite a long process to run. There's lots of chain of custody issues to maintain the, you know, security, integrity of the process. So the process itself then is that the counties are able to function quite well at this, and they do these tests. And then, of course, we have the post-election audit in New Mexico. Not all states do that. Now, that is very true, but we have a post-election audit where we examine a certain proportion of the ballots based upon how close the race is, and we make sure that it matches the records and that the outcome is legitimate.
Let's take another call. Susan in Albuquerque, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for this the show, and hello to Lori. So I have a question, and you did answer it, but I think it's important to state to ask it again and state it clearly again, because you were talking about Native Americans coming in and being asked for a photo ID or some kind of an ID. Do we have to show an ID, but we don't have to show a photo?
No, ma'am. You are not required to show an identification card when you vote. Lana, can you clarify voter identification and what that means under New Mexico law? Mm-hmm. I think that the problem comes with the word identification, and that we assume that identification means that you have to have like a card, like a driver's license or a Social Security card or a voter registration card in your hand.
Yeah, but maybe we need to think about it as voter authentication.
Right.
I don't know if that helps or not.
But voter identification
semantics,
under the law is it does
it's
not.
It's the voter's choice, actually. So that's what's complicating on the one hand. And, you know, voters really don't know the laws. So the minimum standard is that you have to state your name, address, and birth year to the poll worker.
Verbally.
That's the minimum standard. You can also choose to hand them a driver's license, a SAMS, you know, a utility bill, your voter registration card from the Secretary of State. So it is your choice. Now, the problem with having a lot of choice in elections is it actually gives poll workers the more opportunity to sort of set the standard. And so sometimes we have seen, actually quite often we've seen poll workers decide that they are going to go ahead and ask for voter identification when it is not required.
Meaning
and
a
the
photo.
Voter's choice.
Yeah. Meaning a photo, right, as opposed to just the verbal statement.
Can I have your driver's license? Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a lot of training on this. They focused heavily on this. There is voter bill of rights in every vote center in Bernalillo County and in every precinct in the state. There is a vote, you know, that states the rights of a voter and the voter identification rules.
Lori, I'm thinking about what you had mentioned earlier about educating members of tribal communities about their rights as voters. How confusing is this photo identification versus verbal identification issue in your work for NAVA?
So I think that it is true. I like the way Professor Atkinson just put it in that you know, without good training, and then you have poll workers just sort of making up, you know, I need your ID and all this kind of stuff, that it really does push on people who are not used to really being an empowered sort of voter, right? People, you know, and I've been in the position, I've done this work many years, and sometimes there's times when I can feel like I'm really being pushed around, like, oh, okay, right? Those sorts of things, I think, are what we're really trying to flag for people. And in terms of, like, how it impacts in tribal communities, I don't think it's as big of a deal, like I was saying earlier, because a lot of the community folks really do know each other and, you know, oh, that's your grandpa, oh, okay. You know, they can find you on the rolls sorts of stuff. So then there's that level, but I think in the urban areas it is a bigger deal. You know, we do find a lot of times in the past, and it hasn't been as much in more recent years, but I know, like, in the early 2000s, there was a lot of pushback on, like, who are you and what are you doing here voting? And, you know, I don't think this is an appropriate ID, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, and at the time, we weren't as clear, I guess, about what we were supposed to really bring to the polls and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so... So it has been kind of a longer educational effort to get people to understand. But I think there still is some confusion about photo ID versus voter verification or identification sorts of stuff.
Lori Wiaki is with the Native American Voter Alliance here in New Mexico. Lana Atkinson is a political science professor at the University of New Mexico. Let's go to the phones now, where we are joined by the chair of the League of Women Voters, Meredith. Hi, Meredith. Good morning.
Hi, this is Meredith Machen. I'm the voter services chair for League of Women Voters of New Mexico. And I just wanted to thank you for your show. And also to tell people that the League of Women Voters has comprehensive voter guides that are available through our website, lwvnm.org. That's League of Women Voters, New Mexico, .org, lwvnm.org. And the reason I'm calling right now is we don't understand exactly what's going on, but the Secretary of State has said that our voters' guides cannot be at the early voting locations or at the polls anymore, and we've done this for decades. We've had our voters' guides there. And so anyway, people are going to have to look up the voters' guides or go to libraries or other public places to pick them up. They're very important to review before you get into the polling places because there are lots and lots of information, not just on candidates, but on the constitutional amendments, on ballot questions, bond issues, and so on. There are...
Meredith, let me jump in because I want to ask you a question about the voter guides. I did have a chance to speak to the Secretary of State yesterday, and we have aired a couple of news updates on this particular story. And the Secretary of State has said that under the updates to the election code that were passed in 2011, that the terminology around electioneering was updated, and that under that law, according to the attorneys in the Secretary of State's office, and also she said also that the attorneys in the Bernalillo County Clerk's office agreed that the candidate profiles that are included in the League of Women Voters guide are what now fall under this term electioneering, which is prohibited within 100 feet of polling places. So that's the explanation from the Secretary of State's office. My question to you is, will the League of Women Voters be providing the voting guides beyond that 100-foot perimeter at polling places so that folks can still pick them up at the polls, but just within, you know, outside of the restricted area?
That may be what's going on. I've been out of state until last night, and so I don't know exactly what the plan is. I do know that we're going to be trying to get out the vote in many ways, and so maybe we can be 101 feet outside of the polling places. But I do want to stress that the League of Women Voters is totally nonpartisan, and we're providing information about political issues and candidates for public office that would not be considered electioneering, according to our lawyers, because basically electioneering is when you're promoting a candidate, and we are not promoting any candidate or any stances on any issues. We are only trying to promote more participation by the public in government. So we're nonpartisan, and we don't support or oppose political parties or candidates. But I like the idea of being, you know, just a little bit outside of that 100-foot foot line. It's going to be hard to staff that, you know, every day, all those places all around. That's why I'm suggesting people go to the website and go ahead and read and pick up their voter guides at libraries and so on.
Meredith, can you stay on the line with us for a moment?
Please.
Great. I just want to invite listeners, callers, to participate in this conversation. Did you go to a polling place expecting to find a League of Women Voters guide, and were you disappointed that it wasn't there? Or are you also concerned that the candidate profile information that is included in the League of Women's League of Women Voters guide was in bowling places? That is that of concern to you? The number to call is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online or send an email to callinshow@kunm.org. I've got an email comment, Lana, with a question. This is a voter who says that he accidentally marked the wrong bubble in his ballot when he went to vote. And so he told the poll worker, and his ballot was disqualified. And then he was offered a choice, either that his ballot would be hand counted after the election, or that he could despoil his ballot and fill out a new one. And he said he chose to fill out a new one because he was afraid that the despoiled one would be misplaced and not hand counted. Can you respond to his concerns and talk about that type of situation? If you sit down and you bubble the wrong bubble, and then you think, oh, heck, that's not who I wanted to vote for.
Yeah, there are two really common reasons why people, and it's a very small font, it's a very long ballot, why people spoil their ballot. One of them is they incorrectly vote and they notice it, and the second one is that they overvote. They vote for two candidates in the same race. And you have the option of going ahead and having your ballot hand counted in that case, because the machine will reject your ballot and say, hey, we're not going to count this ballot because it's an overvote. If you undervote, if you don't vote for a candidate, the machine will just, your ballot will go through. But if you overvote, it will reject it. And so they give you the option, do you want to spoil your ballot and get a new ballot and resubmit your ballot, or do you want it hand counted? They have a special place. You put your ballot into a pocket in the ESS, the optical scan machine.
I mean, that choice would be because if you get to the end of a very long ballot, you might not want to fill the whole thing out all over again. You might just want to be like, I trust that somebody's going to hand count it when I circle this one and be like, point arrows.
Right.
I'm like, this is the one I meant. This is the one I meant.
Correct.
Okay.
And a poll worker can provide you with information on the correct marks to identify the candidate that you really want in the case that you mistakenly bubbled in the incorrect one, so that you cross it out, you circle exactly, arrow what the correct marks are make sure it's counted correctly.
Do the ones that need to be hand counted, are those automatically hand counted, or are those just saved and counted if the election's close?
No, all the ballots are counted in every election. All qualified ballots, provisional qualified ballots, are counted and go into the total before the canvas is sent to the state.
So there are no ballots sitting in a pile, this race isn't very close, therefore we're not going to count those because they don't matter.
That's correct. All the ballots are counted.
Got it. Let's go to another caller, Fernando in Española. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I'm relatively new to New Mexico, and there was a deadline to register to vote. I guess it was a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the 9th of October was the deadline here in New Mexico.
Well, right. So, but I've been listening to your show, and I'm confused, because if you don't need to have a registration card, and all you have to do is verbally state your name, your address, and your age, then what would be the point of registering? The registration process was also confusing, because I don't know if you've seen the form. They have a VIN number 1 where you put right in your name, a VIN number 2 where you write in your address, and then in little letters above where it's mixed in with for official use only, they have these questions, and mine was returned because it said you didn't say you were 18, when clearly in number 3 or 4 it says, what is your birth date? And can't they do the arithmetic?
Lana, why is there a deadline to register to vote in New Mexico, and what's the difference between the registration deadline and identifying yourself as a registered voter at the polls?
So you have to be registered to vote. So the name, address, and birth year have to match the information on the voter registration file on the e-poll book. So in the case of – that's really unfortunate that your file was returned or your form was returned, and that you couldn't get it in on time. There's a national form. There are local forms at the Secretary of State's office. Different county clerks process those differently. I think some allow perhaps greater amounts of error or incompleteness, and others want greater completeness. That's sort of a matter of perhaps ideology. And, that's their position and power to make that choice.
In the meantime, when you go to the polls, you have to have been registered.
You have to have been registered already.
And then you state the address at which you are registered in order to identify yourself to the poll worker.
Correct.
So what if I have an email comment from Efrain? He says, what should he do if he is not allowed to vote, if he refuses to show a photo ID, if he states his name, address, and date of birth verbally, as is the basic minimum requirement in New Mexico, and is not allowed to vote, what should he do?
Well, then he should vote provisionally. He should be allowed to vote. So the first thing is he should be allowed to vote, and he should note that there are signs posted that explain the rules. If he has to, if he's forced to, then he would be put into a provisional voting status and have to use a provisional ballot. And those are, put in a different pile, and they are qualified. Those voters are qualified after the election. At varying rates. Obviously, it's much better to have your vote counted right away at the polls, put it into the machine, have your vote counted. That's really important. That's better than going into the provisional balloting process, because many of those ballots end up not being counted because they are not qualified voters. They're not on the polls, et cetera.
But if you are registered and your name is on the list and you have the opportunity to sign your name, you should insist on voting, even if somebody says, show me your driver's license.
You should insist on voting in that case. The presiding judge, in the end, will decide whether or not you get a provisional ballot.
When we talk about precinct judges, who are these people? Are they the ones that are sitting behind the table with the list of voters in their hands? Or how do you know who the presiding judge is at a polling place if there are questions about your voting rights?
Well, you can always ask, but the presiding judge is the person sort of floating around. They're the one dealing with voter problems. They're dealing with provisional ballots. They're dealing with issues about candidate write-ins. They're dealing with issues about in lieu of absentee ballots. If you have an absentee ballot, it's important for you to know, if you have not sent it in, that on election day you can turn it in at any voting center to be counted, so you can hand deliver it. During early voting, you can only hand deliver your absentee ballot to the county annex office.
We have another caller, Sharon in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sharon. You're on the air.
Thank you. Mine is not a general question, so it's pretty peculiar. My son had a massive heart attack on Saturday, and he's been in UNMH, had open heart surgery day before yesterday, and he's doing well. But he really, really wants to vote, and he didn't vote early, and he didn't get an absentee ballot. Is all that too late?
Go ahead, Lori.
No, I think he has until November 3rd. I would call down to the county clerk's office and order that absentee ballot.
Well, and we have Meredith from the League of Women Voters on the line. Yeah. Meredith, do you know the answer to that question? And by the way, for the caller, I just wanted to say I hope your son is feeling better. What an unfortunate timing, an unfortunate event for him. Meredith, is there an answer to that question about requesting an absentee ballot? Is it too late to do that?
No. Actually, this Friday, tomorrow is the last day to request an absentee ballot.
And if folks didn't hear you so well, Meredith, but I'm going to repeat what you said. She said that tomorrow, Friday, November 2nd, is the last day to request an absentee ballot. So for that caller whose son is in the hospital, or if you are feeling like you're not going to be able to get to an early voting center or to a voting center on election day, tomorrow is the last day that you can request an absentee ballot. And I believe the recommendation there is to contact your county clerk about requesting an absentee ballot. We are taking your calls this morning. We have about 2 more minutes left in the show for calls. So if you have a quick question, the number to call is 277-5866. That's the local number here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll free 877-899-5866. The League of Women Voters of New Mexico has voter guides that are available in various places in communities across New Mexico, though no longer in polling places. The Secretary of State has ordered that they be removed from polling places themselves. And that guide is available on the League of Women Voters of New Mexico website, which you can find by Googling that. We also have a link online at KUNM.org. Lori Wiaki, any last thoughts as we head towards the end of the show for tribal communities or for getting out the vote, perspectives that you have on how critical is this election critical for tribal communities?
Yes, it definitely is. And I guess I would just encourage everybody to make sure you get out there to the polls. Do your early voting if you can. You still have a couple more days before the polls. And it varies from county to county. I guess I would let folks know about that. But also I really want to send a shout out to all of the folks that are really working on the public interest, the public's behalf, to make sure that our elections are fair and that they are really promoting democracy.
We've got Maggie Toulouse-Oliver on the phone. She is the Bernalillo County Clerk. Good morning, Maggie. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. How are all of you?
We're doing just fine. We're right up at the end of the show, so hop in with your comments.
I just wanted to address, and you know, everyone's done such a great job discussing the issues, especially Lana, who knows so much about the election process, and Lori, of course, is always wonderful. But I just wanted to briefly address the question about the gentleman who's in the hospital. We do have a provision in the law that allows us to provide absentee ballots to folks who are, you know, extremely ill and homebound or in the hospital, and we can actually do that in person. We can send a staff person down to wherever they may be and basically bring a ballot with us and sort of kind of do an all-in-one process. And so I just want to encourage folks, if anyone knows anyone in that situation, like the gentleman that was discussed earlier, just call our office here in Bernalillo County at 243-VOTE or whatever county clerk you belong to, and the county clerk and their staff should be able to provide that opportunity for very ill voters.
Maggie, I spoke to Secretary of State Diana Duran yesterday, and she told me that your legal counsel also agreed with this interpretation of the update to the voting code that was passed last year that prohibits the League of Women Voters guides. Can you just update us a little bit about that?
Well, briefly, I mean, my office, ever since I've been in office, we've always provided the guides. There has never been a question about whether they were legal before. And I do understand that the secretary and the AG are relying upon a relatively new provision that bans electioneering in the county clerk's offices or in alternate sites, which, of course, is sort of a no-brainer. You wouldn't want to have electioneering in those locations. But the definition of electioneering didn't change. The definition of electioneering is in the offenses and penalties section of the election code, and it's actually quite broad. It talks about, you know, pins, buttons, signs, et cetera, which are sort of, you know, obvious things. And then it talks about the electronic or verbal solicitation of a vote. And so both the AG and the county attorneys felt that to broadly interpret that section of the election code, you could extend that to the fact that the candidate's positions are on the issues are listed in the candidate guide. And that is the conclusion that they both came to. And therefore, I reluctantly had to, you know, comply with the secretary's direction to remove the guides.
The Secretary of State did say that she encourages voters to elect representatives and to advocate for having that law changed if folks want to have the guides back in polling locations. That's something that would have to take place by the New Mexico State Legislature. Thanks to you all for joining us this morning. Lana Atkison is a political science professor at the University of New Mexico. Lori Wiaki is with the Native American Voter Alliance. And we also had Meredith from the League of Women Voters joined us on the line. And then you just heard from Maggie Toulouse-Oliver. She is the Bernalillo County Clerk. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks so much for joining us. If you missed part of this show, or you have comments or questions, visit us online at KUNM.org. You can email callinshow@KUNM.org or post your comments online. We'll be back next week, next Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, and hopefully we'll have a lot more information about the outcome of the election next week. I'm sure many people are eager to have this election season come to a close. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. You can find other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. You can download them as a podcast. Thanks for joining us. This is KUNM.